So, as the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa goes on, so Bar Kamsa was forcibly removed by the Balabais, who's throwing the party in front of all the rabbis, and the rabbis didn't protest how he was being treated. So he decided the rabbis didn't protest, they must approve of how it was treated. That's why he started to slander them to the king, that they are rebellious. So he goes to the Caesar and says, Mardu b'cha Yehudai, the Jews have rebelled against you. So the king asked him the obvious question. Mi Amar, says who? Prove it. So he says, send them a sacrifice. Send them a calf. See if they sacrifice it. If they don't sacrifice it, that's the sign they rebel. So the king said it's Iglatilta, a very high quality calf. And Bar Kamsa makes a very subtle wound in it. According to some, he put a little gash in the upper lip. Some, he put a little gash in the eyelid. Something that it invalidates the animal to be a carbon by our standards, but by their standards, vis-a-vis what they used to sacrifice to their pagan gods, they would not consider that a blemish. So it presents the Jewish people with a dilemma, because it's now pasul mizbech, it's invalid to be offered up on the altar. So initially the Rabbanan said, you know what, let's sacrifice it anyway to keep peace with the Caesar. But Zechariah ben Avkula says, no, we can't do that, because people may learn from it that you could sacrifice a blemished animal on the altar. So they said, all right, so let's kill Bar Kamsa, so he won't go back to the king and snitch on us that we did it, that we didn't sacrifice the animal that was sent. All right, if we eliminate him, we could sacrifice a good animal as a decoy. But we have to get rid of him so he won't tell on us. So Rav Zechariah ben Avkula said, no, that's not a good idea, because people may learn from that, may mistakenly learn from that, that matu mum bekotche bihareg, that a person who wounds or blemishes something that's meant to be a carbon deserves death, and that's not the halacha. It's not a good thing to do, but it doesn't deserve death. So people may learn the wrong halacha from it. So they left in this between a rock and a hard place, neither being able to sacrifice the animal nor being able to kill Bar Kamsa. Sure enough, Bar Kamsa reported back, and the rest is history. That that began the siege on Jerusalem was triggered by this incident. And Rabbi Yochanan said, it's the anvitanus of Zechariah ben Avkula, the humility of Zechariah ben Avkula is what destroyed our house, and her had the heavenly chamber of the Beis Midrash burnt and caused us to be exiled amongst the nations. Right? This is the rest of the story, and we're going to divide it up into parts, because each piece over here really needs explanation. The part that we have to deal with in this session is to understand, the Bar Kamsa goes to the Caesar with a story. They rebel. So Caesar asks a very simple question. Says who? Says, well, this is the test. This is the test. See if they sacrifice your animal. I mean, over that, you're going to destroy a whole city? They refuse to sacrifice the animal. Right? So they're guilty of high treason. Right? That's disobedience. That's disrespectful. Put a fine on them. Like, what's going on over here? Like, this is the sign. And the king has a very healthy, skeptical attitude. He's not impulsive to destroy Yerushalayim. But yet, if they don't sacrifice this animal, they rebel. Like, what? That's number one. Number two is a much simpler thing. The Jewish people could have explained to the king, look, we love you, king. It's just that for technical reasons, we can't offer this animal up on the Mizbeach because of the blemish that's in it. Please send us another animal and we'll sacrifice it. Why is it not an option? It's the simplest option. Explain to the king that if he sends another calf, not this one with these little marks, another one, they'll sacrifice it. Why is that not an option? Why was that approach not taken? Okay. Going down, there's also these principles appear in the Maharal, both in the Sefer HaNetzach and his Chidushim on HaGadus. The relationship that Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, has to the Jewish people, it actually has an interesting relationship to the rest of the world. Right? that we know in the future, right, all the goyim will come to sacrifice to Hashem at the base of Mikdash. They'll say, "Now, base of Yaakov, let us ascend to the house of the God of Jacob." Right? In the future, we know the Levim say that, you know, one holiday that they have to be very sure to come and celebrate together with the Jewish people in Yerushalayim is Sukkos. So there's a certain universal aspect that there is between, you know, Yerushalayim and the rest of the world. That as much on the one hand, Yerushalayim is special for the Jews, and yet on the other hand, it's also a universal city. Maybe that's why, by no coincidence, all the nations of the world want a piece of Jerusalem, and that's why the UN wants the Jerusalem to be an international city, you know, shared by all the faiths equally. You know, the metaphysical underpinnings of it, that everyone wants a piece of Jerusalem, is because Yerushalayim really does have a certain universal aspect to it. Of course, the proper way for that universal aspect to emerge is for everyone to acknowledge that Judaism is the real religion, and Hashem, the God of Jews, is God. And in that framework, also find their fulfillment as good Noahites, good B'nai Noach, right? And they're allowed to offer Olos, right? A carbon Ola. They could find their fulfillment through the acknowledgement of the truth of Judaism without converting, just acknowledging that Hashem is God and the Jewish religion is the true religion. And they could find their place, you know, find a way of connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Yerushalayim, you know, in a certain way that the Torah allows for. That's what Chazal say, that if the Goyim would know how good Yerushalayim is, how important the Beis HaMikdash is to them, they would build it out of solid gold. Right? Because, you know, the Beis HaMikdash brings down blessing, not just for Jewish people. The Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash brings down blessing that sustains the whole world. Right? So, you know, there's an aspect of Yerushalayim that's, you know, universal. And needless to say, there's an aspect of Yerushalayim that's particular to the Jewish people, right? And that's the fact that it's not an international city, it belongs to the Jewish people only, right? The fact that there's a lot of avoda that we can do in the Beis HaMikdash that the Goyim can't do, right? Many types of korbanos that we could offer that they can't, they're very limited in the type of korban they can offer, right? Etc., etc. You know, it's needless to speak about what's obvious and well known, that, you know, the Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash and the Avodah Beis HaMikdash more belongs to the Jewish people than anyone else. Right? So in that way, the temple separates us from the rest of the nations. It has a universal aspect, it also has an aspect that's separate from the Jewish people. The Jewish people have a level of divinity no one else has. So there's this duality of Yerushalayim, it's universal, and yet makes the Jews separate and special. This explains, by the way, the Maharal writes in Sefer Ner Mitzvah, right, why the Greeks, you know, had this hang-up. They wanted to defile the temple. Right? They wanted to put an idol there, and they wanted to defile it. They didn't want to destroy it. Right? The aspect of the temple that they're jealous of is not that it represents the Jewish people having in their own independent kingdom. That's not what's on the Greeks' mind. What's on the Greeks' mind is that the temple represents the Jewish levels have a level of divinity and therefore perfection that Greek philosophy and Hellenism doesn't give. And that's what they're jealous of. So they want to defile the temple and deny, right, you know, that the temple has a certain higher level of human, you know, provides a higher level of the human being actualizing his perfection, right? I.e. a level of divinity, right? Something which is totally unavailable through Greek philosophy and through Hellenism. So that's why they wanted to take on the holiness of the temple, which is really the aspect of the temple that divides the Jewish people from the rest of the world, that we have a special level of divinity represented by the temple and the Goyim do not. So that's the duality that there's in Yerushalayim. On the one hand, universal. On the one hand, special for the Jewish people. Right? So now, says the Maharal, look at the amazing parallel of events. Right? You know, Bar Kamsa feels that he was thrown out of the Jewish people because the leaders of the generation were there and didn't protest. Right? So he feels like, you know, there's been a disunity. Right? So he's been thrown out of the Jewish people. So parallel to that, he wants to now take the whole Jewish people with him. He wants to disrupt the universal nature of Yerushalayim. That's an amazing thing, that the Romans already ruled in this area, ruled Israel, and they let the temple be, because they didn't see in the temple the Jewish people having their own sovereignty. They didn't see that in the temple. As it were, subconsciously, they were hooked up, they were tapped into the universal aspect of the temple. So they tolerated the Jewish people having a temple, because the temple, they felt somehow in their subconscious, they were tuned into the fact the temple is good for everybody. So even though we rule here, we'll let the Jewish people have their own temple. Right, but you know, comes Bar Kamsa and wants to now, he's a victim of division, a victim of machlokas, division and divisiveness. So now he wants to, throw that which he was victimized with upon the entirety of the Jewish people and play on the non-universal aspect of Yerushalayim. Play and bring to the foreground what makes Yerushalayim special to the Jews alone, and hence bring out the aspect of divisiveness that there is between Yerushalayim and the Gentile world, which of course would make the Gentiles want to destroy it because they feel that something separate from them, something that makes them feel smaller, makes them feel not as perfect. If that's what Yerushalayim represents, special level for the Jews, of course they're going to come to reject it and want to destroy it. So he wants to bring out the divisive aspect of Yerushalayim. Right? And that's his approach over here. Right? He says, that's what he says. You think Yerushalayim is a house, like it says in the future, will indeed be. Ki beisi beis tefila yikari l'chol ha'amim. My house will be a house of prayer for all the nations. Right? You're keyed into that. You think that that's the way it is. It's a lie. Really, the Jewish people, the temple is something special for them, and it's their special exclusive club, and with it they look down on you. Right? Really, Bar Kamsa is really everything that happened to him. He's putting it on the entirety of Yerushalayim. It's an exclusive club, and they look down at people who aren't in their exclusive club, like we explained in our last session. So he's throwing everything that happened to him onto Yerushalayim and say, you think it's a universal city, a city that services the entirety of mankind, which is true, by the way, but he wants to deny that aspect and bring to the foreground the aspect of how Yerushalayim is special to the Jews, and it's their exclusive club and their exclusive temple, which would cause the Gentiles, of course, to want to destroy it because it's rejectionist of them. So he says, you'll see, they don't consider the divine service that you could do in the temple on par with their divine service. Send them your sacrifice, you see, it won't sacrifice. So, of course, he sent them a sacrifice under the conditions that a Gentile can sacrifice. So Bar Kamsa has to stop that, but in a way, in a very intelligent way, that shows that the Jewish people are divisive, they're separate from the nations of the world and they have their own exclusive clique. Right? So he puts a blemish in the lip and in the eyelid. The lip and the eyelid, represent spiritual perfection. Because, what do we do with the lips? With the lips, we speak. Speak is, a capacity that comes from intelligence, and intelligence comes from the soul. Right? The eyelid, the eye is the number one tool that we use to learn. Right? We observe and we process information. Right? What we know to be true, it's immutable fact, is the things that we see. That's what we establish as fact. The eye is, the highest sense of human being used in the pursuit of knowledge. So he puts, it's very deep, what he did over here. He put a blemish in these two places that represent spiritual perfection. And the Goyim don't consider that a blemish at all, because in their world, perfection is bodily perfection. And there's nothing wrong. You would not get a discount in the cattle market. A calf would not go for one penny less if it has a little slit in its lip or a little slit in its eyelid. So they're a perfectly good animal. It's a perfectly good animal. An animal is a creature of body, and its body is 100% operational and functional and healthy. And that's the whole secular perfection. Secular notion of perfection is having a healthy body and everything that the body could want. You know, money and pleasure, right? That's, you know, that's perfection to a Gentile, right? Gentile doesn't have aspirations to spiritual and divine levels. He doesn't, you know, that's extra credit. That's extra credit. That's just, you know, just gravy. That's, you know, not essential. You're better if you have it, but you're not worse if you don't. The main thing is to be of whole body and of whole, all your bodily needs seen to. That's Gentile perfection. So they don't view it as a blemish if you have a slit in your lip or a slit in your eyelid because the body is complete. Right? They don't view blemish the person who's not spiritual. The person who's not spiritual is not spiritual, not blemish. Right? So this carbon represents the fact that we consider it a blemish and they don't is a very deep thing. That we consider someone blemished and deficient and less if he's not a Talmud Chacham, if he has bad midas, if he's not connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he's lacking spiritual levels represented by the lips and the eyelid, right? So he's so we consider him blemished, not that he's missing some extra credit, right? It's blemished. So that's why, says the Maharal, they couldn't explain it to him. He said, look, you know, we consider this blemish by our standards. That itself gives away, you know, the thing that they're trying to cover up. Is that, oh, so you do think you're better than us. You consider that these spiritual levels that you have, you know, which are manifest in the base marriage, they make you better than us. You know, not just a certain idea, they make you categorically better than us. And we're considered blemished by comparison. Oh, so you really do look down on us. Right? Trying to explain to the king itself will arouse his anger. His anger will be aroused, you know, because it will actually bring, you know, Bar Kamsa's story, you know, to the foreground and actually substantiate. Yeah, the Jews think that they're better than us. They consider us blemished by comparison. That's why they were deadlocked in this issue. So in short, you know, what happened over here is that Bar Kamsa's, his whole thing, his message to the king is, you know, not that there was a physical rebellion with armies and all, but that the Jews think they're better than you, right? And he brings to the foreground the aspect of Yerushalayim that's special to the Jews, that the Goyim can't tap into. That's what he brings to the foreground. That's brought to the foreground by sending a korban that's complete in body, i.e. has Gentile perfection, but has, you know, certain slits that by our standards we call the blemish. They wouldn't call it blemish. They said, oh, it's not 100% brutal, it's a blemish. And in fact, trying to explain it to the king would only make it worse because it would substantiate Bar Kamsa's story. That's what was going on in Bar Kamsa's slander, and this is what got rid of, unfortunately, successful in doing.